comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotalk Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 93, Mobile Accessibility for Android. Our guests this evening are the infamous Joe Steinkamp.
Good evening, Michael. I think this one's going to be a lot more upbeat.
Yeah, I think so. We do have some very positive news. Also joining us, JJ Meadow with his new project, AndroidAccess.net.
It is always a new project. Good to be back, as always.
Yes, and also joining us is Access on a first, before we get into that here, an interview that we pre-recorded yesterday with Caroline from Code Factory. It lasts about 23 minutes. What recently released from Code Factory is mobile accessibility, giving increased functionality to a variety of Android phones, version 2.1 and later. And speaking with us now is Caroline from Code Factory. Caroline, thanks for joining us today.
Hello, how are you doing?
We are doing great. Also, Joe Steinkamp is with me here. I guess we'd like you to begin by giving us a description of Mobile Accessibility Screen Reader Suite and kind of what's offered in this application.
Mobile Accessibility is a screen access application which allows people who are blind or have low vision to use an Android phone in a very intuitive, easy, and simple way. Actually, it is two products in one. On one end, it is a suite of 10 accessible applications in order to allow our users to perform the most common operation very easily, like make a call, send an SMS, read an email. The 10 accessible applications which are on the suite are phone, contacts, SMS, alarm, calendar, email, web, where am I to figure out your GPS position, apps, and setting. And they've all been designed especially for how users, and obviously the textual information is spoken using a voice synthesis. In this case, Nuance Vocalizer voice synthesis. And on the other end, apart from being a suite of accessible applications, mobile accessibility also includes a screen reader component so that if you get out of the suite, you still can get speech feedback and navigate through the standard interface of your Android phone in an accessible way.
Now, we've had people ask if you can use mobile accessibility in conjunction with TalkBack or Spiel.
Yeah, of course. Actually, you go to Settings, Accessibility, and under Accessibility Services, you can choose the screen reader component you want to use. So if you install TalkBack, Spiel, and Mobile Accessibility, you will have the three of them, and you can check the box you want to activate.
How long has mobile accessibility been in development? How long have you been working on the product?
We started thinking about developing on Android when we came back from CSUN last year, so around March, April last year. And we started looking at the system, reading a bit about what people were thinking about the platform before to really figure out what we wanted to do and how we wanted to contribute to the accessibility of Android. And we actually started coding in September last year, like 4 months and a half till mid-January. We started the beta, 1 month and a half of beta, and we released a few days ago, the 2nd of March.
So let's talk about that beta experience. Kind of how did that change the products? What did you learn and what features maybe were added based on comments from your beta testers?
The beta was great. Actually, that was one of the best beta team we had so far, and we've been running a lot of beta with all of our other products. We had maybe like around 50 beta testers from different countries, and that was just crazy. There was so much traffic, maybe sometimes up to 70 messages during just one day. We had really a lot of feedback, and apart from bug fixes and compatibility with different devices, the feedback was really good, especially to improve the usability of the products, like which kind of gesture we should implement, which kind of key we should press, how we should press it, how we should access a feature in this way or not. And the big thing that really been so helpful to have this beta team was all what we did with the virtual keyboard. Actually, all the layouts, the commands, the alternative characters, everything was really coming from the feedback of the users. Some users wanted us to use the volume up and down, the keys of the volume up and down to reject and answer calls. So that's something that we implement and add extra settings. Also, we were using before a long press in the menu key in order to activate the quick menu. And the beta team just said, oh, it would be better just to use the menu key with a normal press so that it's more like in sync with the Android phone. The beta was very good, very intense, but very good feedback and really helped us a lot in order to improve the usability of the product.
Soon working with Android required you make some changes. There's probably some people that maybe expect it to work like mobile speak, but realizing that Android just works differently, I guess there's quite some changes you had to make in the program.
That's a very good question. Actually, developing on Android, it's totally different than developing on Symbian or Windows Mobile. It might sound a bit paradoxical, but Android is, as you know, is an open source platform. But from a developer point of view, it's very limited. There's a lot of restriction within the system itself. And there's something that you don't find in Windows Mobile or Symbian, which is an accessibility API. The API is kind of an interface between the application that you develop and the system and the platform of Android. So it actually helps you to communicate with the platform. And the accessibility API, what it does, it captures the text so that you can then process it and make it speak. To have an accessibility API, it's just like such a big luxury for a company like us because we never had this kind of help before. And if you have an accessibility API, to develop a screen reader is kind of easy. To be honest, to develop the screen reader component of mobile accessibility, I think it took us no much more than half a day to make some bug fixes and improvements. But the screen reader component itself was quite easy because there were the accessibility API. But the thing is that if at some point the API doesn't allow you to capture some text, there is no alternative way to get the text and make it speak. That's the problem. On the Windows Mobile and Symbian platform, there is no API, so everything is much more complex and it's much more time-consuming. You have to look at thousands of lines of code in order to know where is the text, and that's very complicated. But there is always a way, or you can always try to find a way to make the text speak, which is not the case in Android because you are limited to what the accessibility API actually provides you. When we start investigating the platform and we realized that there were these kind of technical limitation, we knew that we couldn't port mobile speak because that was just not technically possible. And this kind of limitation that we were finding exactly the same as the one that other screen readers like TalkBack or Spiel have been facing during their development. We cannot make a better screen reader than other people because that there are those limitations. And when we were listening to podcasts, and actually the two first podcasts that you released, I think that was back in September and December about how to use Android. The feedback of the earlier adopters was really like, it's a good platform, but you have to be very tech savvy. You have to be okay to have headache and things are not moving straightforward and you have to fight with the system and it's not for everyone. I think that was really our conclusion. Like today with what you have, it's not for everyone because it's not easy to use. That's why we decided to create mobile accessibility, and that's why we decided to have this suite of accessible application, because our philosophy since 2003, since we released Mobile Speak for Symbian phone, always been to give access to mainstream applications and not at all to create a special application especially designed for the blind. That never been our philosophy. When we realized that things were not technically possible, we thought again about, okay, should we do something special? And when we realized that making some special apps would allow our users to gain in productivity and to be able to do things much faster, we said, yes, in this case, that might be a good thing to do. We created our own accessible framework. I'm going to try not to be too technical, but when you develop an application, apart from other things, what you have to do is to design the UI, the user interface. We created a layer of accessibility which surrounds this UI, this user interface. So when the user communicates with the UI of the application, first, everything goes to the accessible framework. And then everything become accessible because this accessible framework is actually the key of mobile accessibility. It's based all our know-how of those last 10 years. And that's why when you are inside the suite, everything is controlled by the accessible framework. So everything can be accessible and the touchscreen is accessible. Everything you do is accessible. When you get outside the suite, then you lose the control and you depend on the Accessibility API. So if the Accessibility API doesn't give you all what you need, that's when the screen reader component cannot be fully accessible with everything. Something important is that all the components that we are using with this accessible framework are not component that we created ourselves. If we are in the email application, we are using the Gmail, we are using the native component. We are not creating our own contacts for the contact application either. We are using the Google contact. So that's also very important to understand. We haven't made public this information yet, but I believe that that might be a good occasion to be on this show to do it, is that when I'm talking about this accessible framework, we are thinking about the possibility to open it to third-party developers so that if someone wants to create an application and make it accessible, they could just plug to our accessible framework, and without much work, this application could be accessible. Like, for example, if someone wants to make a Twitter client, could plug to our accessible framework, and then if you do long press volume down, which is when you are in mobile accessibility, it allows you to activate the speech recognition. If you were with this Twitter client plugged to the accessible framework, it will also allow you to speak your tweet in the same way. And the programmer of this third-party application wouldn't have to do anything. That would be all automatic. That's also an option which is going to make mobile accessibility very, very much powerful.
Okay, so with so many choices for Android phones, can you suggest specific phones or types of phones that will work best with mobile accessibility?
The first thing is that mobile accessibility supports Android 2.1 phones and above. The speech recognition feature only works with 2.2 and above. So you might prefer to have a 2.2 and above Android phone. If you get out of the suite, if you are using the screen reader component with the standard Android interface, then you will need a trackball. You will need some navigation keys. So better to have a trackball or a trackpad. And then if you want to have a QWERTY keyboard, it's up to you. If you are thinking about typing a lot, it's always easier for everyone to type with physical keys than with the touchscreen. But virtual keyboard of mobile accessibility also works outside the suite, so you could use it. Can we assume that your audience is mostly from the US? Should I recommend some devices which are available in the US?
The majority is, not exclusively, but the majority is, yes.
There is the HTC Desire Z, which is also known as the T-Mobile G2, with a QWERTY keyboard and an optical trackpad. From AT&T, you will find the Motorola Flipside or the Motorola Flipout. They both have a QWERTY keyboard. From Verizon, you have the Motorola Droid 2 Global. And then you also have the LG Ally. And the LG Ally is also known as LG Aloha. Maybe you will find this name outside the US. From Sprint, you can find the Epic 4G, which is also known outside the US as Samsung Galaxy S Pro. Also from Sprint, there is another good device, which is the HTC Evo Ship 4G. All those phones have a QWERTY keyboard.
And what about our listeners in the UK?
In the UK, I believe you will find the HTC Desire Z or the Samsung Galaxy S. They might be in the UK.
And the Motorola Milestone also, which would be the Droid in the US.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I can't get to all the countries in the world, but I assume you have a list of phones, maybe on the Code Factory website?
Yeah, on the website you will find a recommended list of phones, which are the most popular phones among our beta users. You go to the main menu and there is a phone section, and on the phone you will find Android and you will find some recommended phone. But basically it should work with Android 2.1 and above.
Okay, so can you talk about or how the touchscreen works with the virtual keyboard? Can you explain that?
The touchscreen keyboard work outside and inside the suite of mobile accessibility. But that's important to know that it also work outside. When you activate it, so if you are inside, that's long press volume up, and if you are outside, that's long press on the menu key. If you activate the virtual keyboard, you have the QWERTY keyboard, which is virtually displayed on the screen in landscape. So then you just move your finger around the screen, and mobile accessibility will tell you the letter which is under, like QWERTY, if you are moving from the top left to right. And then when you find the letter you want to mark, you just lift your finger and it will mark. There is like different layouts with the virtual keyboard, typical QWERTY lowercase, QWERTY uppercase, symbol, numeric. There are some very nice features, like especially when you are outside the suite, once you activated the virtual keyboard, then you can slide up and down to navigate per control. So it gives you a nice way to move from different control. With swipe right and left, you can read or review the text by word, sentence, or character. You can change the navigation mode with the volume down key in order to decide if you prefer to move per character or word or sentence. And also with long press and volume down, you can at any time activate the speech recognition. You will feel like a vibration. You speak like hello. You release, and then Mobile Accessibility will say hello. You double tap on the screen, or you press the enter key, and hello will be marked. So that's actually a great way, because you can really write an SMS in a very, very fast way.
Does your calendar app work with Google Calendar?
Yeah, of course. If you actually go inside the suite of apps of Mobile Accessibility, you create a calendar event, and then you go with your desktop Google Calendar, you will find the event you just created before on your mobile phone with Mobile Accessibility.
Okay, now you mentioned some limitations with Google API. Does this prevent you from implementing certain features? Are you working with Google and giving them input on improving API from their side to work with your accessibility framework and to add more features?
We are not really working in direct collaboration with Google, but we did meet some feature requests in order to improve the accessibility API. So we hope that they will take it into account. Yes, of course, there are lots of limitations. I mean, the first thing is that we just cannot develop a full screen reader like Mobile Speak with the current tools that we have with Android platform. For example, we cannot capture the touch events before they arrive to the system. So if you cannot capture the touch event before, then you cannot make it speech before it actually activated. And that's what we are able to do when you are inside the suite of Mobile Accessibility, thanks to the accessible framework. And something else that you cannot do is that you cannot simulate keys from an external device, like a Braille display. So for example, if you were pairing a Braille device by Bluetooth to the Android phone and you were inputting some text, we don't have a way to simulate keys. So that's why we cannot provide Braille support at the moment, because of the limitation of the system.
Okay, now you said versions 2.1 or later of Android. What about 3.0, the honeycomb?
We are definitely looking at it. It's definitely on our roadmap. It shouldn't be very complicated to implement. So I hope that we will have something running on tablets very soon.
Yes, that was my next question. If we will maybe be able to use something like the Zoom or some tablet so that folks can have a Android equivalent of the iPad to work with.
We really hope so. We didn't look into a lot of details with tablets and Honeycomb 3.0, but technically it should really be possible. So that's on our roadmap, and we hope to make it possible very soon.
Okay, what is your price for mobile accessibility?
So Mobile Accessibility can be purchased through the Android market at 69 euros, which is at the current exchange rate around 95 US dollar. But at the moment, you will only find Mobile Accessibility demo on the market. The paid version is not yet available on the market because you have the 30-day trial demo. So we first let our users to try the product, and then very soon we will release the paid version.
Now, I assume Google will be making changes, and of course you'll be making updates. So have you set a pricing structure for future upgrades?
Not really, but we can assume that there will be some free updates, obviously, for bug fixes, small improvements to make compatible mobile accessibility with newer versions of Google, or if Google change some things that we have to update mobile accessibility, there will be some free updates, of course. We didn't really think yet so much about upgrade policy, because that's the version 1.0 of mobile accessibility. But we believe that if we add some extra apps to the suite of mobile accessibility, we might release them as separate standalone add-on as a different app in the market. That's a possibility.
Or maybe even doing something like in-app purchases. Has there been any challenges in working in the Android market or getting the it through the Android market system?
No, it's been quite straightforward. No, actually, that's quite easy because all the licensing system is handled by the market, and we don't have to have our own security and licensing system like that was the case with products like MobileSpeak, and the licensing is a big part of the development efforts of MobileSpeak. So no, actually that was very, very easy.
Now, when you mentioned contact, you said including things like Facebook. So is there Facebook support in your specific suite, or how is that accomplished?
No, it's just that when you want to add a contact, you can add the contact from Facebook also, but there is not yet an app, especially to navigate through all the interface of Facebook. But actually, if we decide to release this SDK of the accessible framework for third-party developers, maybe someone will want to do it.
Okay, so what are the limitations of the browser? I mean, I know you're adding the browser gives a lot of capability that folks have never had before, but what are some websites or certain services that cannot yet be used?
Actually, I can tell you more what are the good things about the web browser and how easy to use the web browser is thanks to the touchscreen support and the jump modes. To know really which websites are not working, the best is to subscribe to our mobile accessibility mailing list. And there are a lot of our beta testers, the ones who really like testing the products a lot and browsing a lot of websites. The beta testers are really the best people to tell you in depth about the use of the product.
Were you surprised at the number of users that wanted to be a part of the beta that have really grabbed on to the press releases? It seems like there's been a silent minority, but it's actually been a very large majority of Android users that I don't think people realize there were that many users out there for the product.
Yeah, definitely. When we were seeking for beta tester in the announcement, we said that we wouldn't take more than 30 people. And actually, we ended up with 60 people because we didn't want to leave out of the beta too many. Many of the people who were willing to test the product. That was quite surprising because the accessibility of Android, there've been some very good things done, but if you compare to Symbian or Windows Mobile or even iPhone, it was not yet very satisfactory. So yeah, we were very surprised. And we think that obviously Android is a very powerful platform. They are gaining market share every day. I mean, when you will go to your phone shop, most of the choice will be Android phones. And that's why we wanted to give support for Android phones, because we want our user to be able to go to the phone shop and be able to have more choice when they look for a supported phone.
How many languages are supported with mobile accessibility?
At the moment, only English. There's actually two versions of mobile accessibility, US English and UK English. We are working on the localization. It will take us a bit of time in order to create a localization system and be able to translate and integrate more TTS languages. But today, it's only English, US and UK. And on the short term, we will include French, Spanish, Italian, and German. Obviously, it will depend on the user demand also, because it takes time to do localization. So it will depend on what users are asking for.
That leads to my next question of, can you give any insights of what you're working on in the future for mobile accessibility? Are you waiting at this point to see what your user input is?
The top priority is to work on the localization system so that we can translate the program and have more multiple languages. Second, we want to work on the SDK of the accessible framework. In order for third-party developers to use it, we need to prepare it and to make documentation, etc. But we really think that it's going to be a very powerful tool. So that's on our very short-term roadmap. And then we will add more apps to the suite and give a lot of attention to the accessibility API of Google. And as soon as there are more things we can do with the screen reader component, we will.
Okay, well, very good. We thank you, Caroline, for taking time out of your busy schedule. And we hope you can come on future podcasts as you do future innovations and take mobile accessibility to the next level. We fully support your efforts and the ability to make a larger variety of mobile devices accessible.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. That was a pleasure to be on the show today. Maybe I just would like to add two things. First, that myself and Ferran, our CTO, we will be at CISN, at the CISN conference next week, March 16 to 19. We don't have a Code Factory booth, but we will be with our partners there. You can also just contact me through Twitter at Code Factory, and we'll be happy to meet you. We'll be happy to demo you the product and show you all the feature of mobile accessibility. We really developed mobile accessibility because we were thinking at the time Android was was a platform only really available for the most advanced user. And we really did mobile accessibility so that everyone can use an Android phone. And it's not only just early adopters or the most tech-savvy people who can use an Android phone, but everyone. So that's really our message, and that was really our objective.
All right, Caroline Raggett with the Code Factory. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good stuff, and you heard it here first. Making an accessibility framework available for third-party developers. I have to ask JJ, being a coder, how are you feeling about that, buddy?
That's a very interesting idea. That's the first I've heard something like that.
You heard it here first.
I think that's going to be very helpful. I could definitely see some opportunities for doing that. The key would be if you can create an app that both uses their accessibility API, but is still also available to everybody else on the market. Because I think part of the goal of developing applications, at least from my perspective, is I want to be able to develop an app that's both usable by the blind and by everybody else at the same time. That way, you know, I'm not limiting myself.
Well, and to do that, you have created AndroidAccess.net. Please talk about that service you just launched 3 days ago.
Sure. And with apologies to Joe, we thought about giving them an exclusive, and you guys are exclusive on this.
But you couldn't wait. You were up all night, as I noticed.
Yeah, I absolutely was up. And actually, Anna was helping out quite a bit, giving all sorts of ideas and things, too, which I really appreciate. But Android Access, well, to be frank, it's the Android answer to AppleVis, which is a great resource for iPhone and iOS users. And we've created a website that aims to list accessible applications for Android. A lot of the talk about there's definitely a lot of misconceptions about what Android will and will not work with. And so rather than let those misconceptions float around, we thought it was high time to create a resource and to help out users and give potential users information on the applications that are available. We also link to other resources that are available, giving an introduction on Android. We're soon going to add more information on phones, things like that. We pulled in information from Accessana's blog as far as she posts a lot of great Android articles and tutorials and things like that. So far in about the first 3 days, it's AndroidAccess.net, and I think we're up to about 65, 70 apps already, and of course there's a lot more that work, but I think it's a pretty good start to kind of give you an idea of some of the things that are available. It's free. You can sign up for an account to add your own reviews. Actually, if you have a Blind Bargains account, it's the same account. So to sign up for an account, you can post your reviews, and we definitely look forward to helping to grow the community. There's a Twitter as well, Android Access, which where all the new whenever there's new app posted, a message gets pinged over to Twitter as well.
Access Anna, please talk about your experiences. What do you feel that mobile accessibility has brought to the table, and where are you today with what? Which phone are you using? And
well, I'm using the Motorola Droid One. It's an older phone, only 6 months older. So, I really like the thing I like best about mobile accessibility is that people who have been leery of Android and who have all of this strange information that is misinformation are now trusting the platform a little more. And I think that Caroline's point about producing a product that makes the interface easier, makes it less scary, is a great way of bringing people over to Android. I think that once they feel comfortable with mobile accessibility, which will be in a few days, if not a week, they'll start exploring Android and really discovering how powerful it is.
Well, the biggest thing that held a lot of people back is the browser. So I'm curious, what can we do with the browser, and maybe what are some of the current limitations?
The browser that we had before was Ideal Web Reader, and its greatest strength is that you can access just about any page. Its greatest limitation is that once you're on the page, you can't really do much as far as easily navigating to specific parts of the page or searching for parts of the page, and it's got a bug that's really, really annoying, and a lot of times pages open at the end. So when it's behaving itself, it's usable and it's nice, you know, and it gets the job done, but it's not as comfortable as we're used to. But the browser that Mobile Accessibility has developed is just is very much like using a browser on the computer. You can jump to headings and tables and links, and it's a lot easier to move around on the page to find the information you want. A lot of times, I work as a freelancer, and I do a lot of my work away from home, and so a lot of times I'm researching something on the road, and with Ideal Web Reader, that wasn't very easy to do. With the web browser that Mobile Accessibility has, I can do it, and sadly, I often do. I'm sitting there with my Mocha and my Android phone trying to figure out a translation for some obscure tax law term, you know. And so it's great. One of the limitations of the Mobile Accessibility browser is that it doesn't work as well with certain pages. For example, just the general mobile Google site is a little tricky, but if you go into the classic site, then you can do what you need to do. So, you know, it's a trade-off, and I think overall the Mobile Accessibility browser is much easier to use, and it's a much richer experience for the end user.
Well, as we go into this,
I agree with that.
Yeah, hold on, Joe. I'll hand it to you in just a second. We're going to let Joe Steinkamp kind of drive the second half of this conversation. Just want to let folks know you're listening to Cerro Talk Tech Chat 93, Mobile Accessibility for Android, the latest release from Code Factory. Next week we will be at CSUN. So there will not be a live event. We will have something pre-recorded for you, but also join us March 24 as we give you our CSUN 2011 highlights. And, of course, we invite you to listen to interviews that we will be cruising around CSUN and gathering over at cerrotalk.com. So, Joe, we're going to let you drive it here because you are certainly involved in this, very passionate about it, and a lot of positive feedback.
Absolutely. One of the things that was really amazing about this beta, and I've been on lots of betas in my time, and I'm not just kidding. I've been involved in betas with assistive technology companies since 1998 for various companies. But this was one of the most congenial and fun beta lists I've ever been on. And I'm not a huge mailing list kind of guy. But there was a lot of exploration that was going on with this beta list, everybody helping out each other. And there was a lot of good product feedback because I think Code Factory came in with one idea, and by the time it met the wall of beta testers, we came away with different features or different ways to approach things. I think one in particular that JJ and I kind of bolstered the crew to go after was the menu key. One of the things that I enjoy about my Android phone is that it feels a little PC-like, and that If you hit the top left key on the extended keyboard, it's kind of like backspace is my escape key. And on the top right is my menu key, which acts like an applications key. Because when you're surfing around on Android, one of the great things is that if you can't find a button or if it's poorly labeled, chances are they put it as a shortcut in the menu area. So in a way, it's just like right-clicking on something and being able to get to a faster shortcut. And initially, there was not a menu key option within Mobile Accessibility. You were actually using the menu key as kind of your quick way to jump between tables and forms and links and stuff for quick nav. But JJ and I and others jumped in and said it would be really good if that came across and it acted just like it would in other Android apps. And in the next build, we had it. And it is one of my favorite features. In fact, a little better than the browser because I like being able to navigate things rather quickly with the D-pad. And let me also throw this open to you guys. Did you play with it any – where were you? Were you touchscreen mostly, or were you keyboard oriented like I was?
I was very keyboard oriented. We did 10 betas in all, and I think it wasn't until about beta 7 or 8 that I remembered I had a screen that I could play with. And I really pushed myself to use the touchscreen, but I I'm just so used to using that D-pad that I just go to town with it.
It's kind of funny. Yeah, I had the same thing happen. I've definitely mostly keyboard and the D-pad, but try to remember sometimes, I'm trying to do this a little bit, there are definitely some instances, for instance, the home screen, which has the 10 items laid out. With your keyboard closed, it's in two columns with five each. So instead of using the D-pad, down arrow, you know, down to whichever one you want, you can figure out about where on the screen the one is that you need and, you know, slide to it and then double tap. So I'm definitely starting to remember, like, hey, well, if I'm in the SMS app, I know the you know, there's the edit box way at the top, and I can touch the top of the screen to jump back there instead of having to arrow through. So I think for a newer Android user who maybe wasn't so used to that, it'd probably be a little bit easier for them to use the touchscreen, or for people like us. Yeah,
I exactly. agree. Yeah.
And, you know, we came in being basically told, you know, before with TalkBack and Spiel that the touchscreen was pointless. So they did a good job with it.
Of course, you know, once I started playing with the touchscreen, certain things just zip by, you know, when you're sliding your finger around. So it's really nice. And oddly, for me, having an accessible touchscreen in and of itself was not a priority until I started to use mobile accessibility. Then I thought, wow, this is great.
and the virtual keyboard was a little hard for me to get used to as well. I do like one of the things that was implemented was the ability to swipe with keys and get to alternate keys or long press on keys. And if you're looking at it from, and I don't want to go too far down this road with comparing apples to quote-unquote apples, but if you look at it from another virtual keyboard standpoint, if you long press on some of those letters, you'll get like C, Charlie, or V, Victor. And so they thought about that, and they actually gave you the ability to do other characters and maneuver between the ability to go between symbols without having to reach for multiple things as well. So there was a lot of thought to that, and I appreciated that. Even though I'm not a huge virtual keyboard user, there were a lot of people who loved being able to get to an edit field and having that virtual keyboard come up and kind of keep their fingers on the screen, which is impressive. Again, not your mileage will vary, but it wasn't necessarily something that I kept going back to the hardware keyboard, because I'm just, again, I'm one of those guys that just likes to press keys. But when we look at how this product is evolving, and we consider where it started from with Android, there are several people out there who are going to say, okay, I've got Spiel, I've got TalkBack, and this comes with mobile accessibility zone voice, the vocalizer. But there are a lot of people who are saying, why should I have to pay for access if I can do blank? Can you guys touch on that really quickly about what, other than the browser, this helped you with playing with this over the last, say, you know, 2 months?
Well, it's an odd thing. I think that if you're comfortable with the Android environment, mobile accessibility may not be for you, because you can do a lot of the same for free. But if you're not quite comfortable with it, a lot of people feel that Android is very fragmented, and I think that's true, especially when you're starting out. It almost feels like there's a different rule for everything until the whole system clicks and you discover the consistency in it. But I think for people who are just really struggling to learn Android, mobile accessibility is a very unifying concept. And as you were talking about with the example of the menu key, Code Factory did a nice job of implementing some of the characteristics of Android, so they should transfer over when people start exploring the rest of the phone. Beyond that, mobile accessibility does have some nice quirks, perks. The virtual keyboard is nice in and of itself, but beyond using it to input text, what I really like is that I can review text. And I'm a writer, so for me, reviewing text is 90% of writing. And so that's been my own biggest struggle with Android. And so mobile accessibility allows me to do that. And that's a nice perk. So I think, you know, it also opens Android up to people who don't have a lot of options in terms of phones with QWERTY keyboards. So I think there's a place for it, it's a very personal decision.
For me, besides the web browser, I think it's kind of nice to have a unified homepage. There's the Eyes Free Shell, which is one of the free home screen, alternate home screens that you can get, and that provides some information. The interface on that thing is a little quirky. I think it's just TV Ram, I don't know how you say his name, but he likes, it's just the way they kind of implement things. It gets some things done, but it really kind of leaves a lot to be desired as far as features. And the mobile accessibility home screen interface, even as an advanced phone user, it's very comfortable. There's a menu. They can press the menu key to get phone status, date and time, and do things like that. And it's very easy to move around. It's kind of nice to have that base. Another one that is made accessible with that is the calendar. Unless you have a very new Android running 2.3, which is not very many at this point. I don't think any accessible phones. You don't really have access to the calendar, but you do with mobile accessibility, so that's really nice to have. It's just a little thing. Oh, speech recognition is certainly another one, and it was part of the reason I did a demo on mobile accessibility, and I chose speech recognition as my demo because I thought it's really cool. Not only can you use it inside of mobile accessibility to compose text messages or search for things in the browser, things like that, but you can use it outside of mobile accessibility, just as you could use the virtual keyboard to input text using your voice. And it's using Google's voice recognition, which we all know is pretty dang good. And even on an edge connection, it actually comes back within a couple of seconds. It's very flexible, and it works really well. So that's definitely one of the things for me. The final one I'd mention, and it's just a little tiny thing, but big on Android. Android has a thing called the notification area. And for those of you who may be used to the iPhone or other operating systems, it's kind of like tooltips in Windows, where you can pop up little things. Okay, this application has an update. You have 2 missed calls. Whatever apps, Twitter can pop a message in there if they want, or any of those different apps. And it was a little hard to get to that using some of the other solutions that are out there, but mobile accessibility has a nice little shortcut. Another one of those things that we kind of hammered on them during the beta cycle to get, and once they added it, it really does make a lot of those little tasks a lot easier to have a nice little shortcut to that.
Okay, so if I go...
Totally agree. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was going to say, if I go out and buy a phone, Android phone tomorrow, I'm kind of intrigued with it now. I feel like it's coming together, although I do have concerns that even Code Factory's not having direct dialogue or ongoing dialogue with Google, and there's always a concern if they make changes to the API. But assuming that we are moving forward, as it does appear, I want to go out and get a phone tomorrow, or maybe my iPhone 2 years expires in June, and I want to take the plunge. What do I need to do? What do I need to know if I go grab a phone tomorrow to make it work?
Well, you got to make a decision on what kind of phone that you would want. Remember that Android has hundreds of handsets at this point, and there are some affordable ones out there. However, those might be running a older version of Android or not, might not have the ability to upgrade to the later versions of Android. And as we heard in our interview with Carolyn, there is a difference between 2.1 and phones running 2.2 and higher. As JJ said, with speech recognition, it changes once when you have that on board. The other thing is that, like my LG Li, that phone came out in May of last year, and it was running Android 2.1. It didn't get the 2.2 update until last month, and there's no guarantee that I'll get 2.3. So you have to make a decision on a phone that kind of meets your budget, meets the kind of screen size you want, because certainly there are some larger phones out there. I mean, there's the Droid X, which is the size of a video magnifier for a handheld. The other part of this, too, is do I want something that's all touch, or do I want something that's keyboard-oriented, slide out, or what have you? And, that is another one of those where you want to go into the store, pick it up, touch it, see how it feels in your hands, see how they work. I like my Ally again because it has keys that are slanted. There's a little bit of texture to them. So the home row keys in the center are kind of pointing upwards and the other keys are sloping downwards. I'm not a big fan of the Droid because the keys feel like big stone tablets to me. And that's a personal preference once again. But that would be the first thing I would consider, is what kind of phone I would want, and then what kind of input style do I want? Because with mobile accessibility, you can use touchscreen-only phones. It's a little bit more difficult, in my opinion, but it's certainly not without the realm of possibility. What do you guys think?
Whether you decide on the hardware keyboard or not, I think you definitely need a phone with a physical navigational control, like four arrow keys or a D-pad, a trackball or a trackpad, something you can find with your fingers and something you can use to move focus in all four directions. Even if you plan to spend most of your time in mobile accessibility, you're going to exit from time to time to check your notifications, to power the phone off, to go into Android settings for this and that, to maybe turn off GPS, that kind of thing. So there is a trend toward phones without this type of physical navigational control, or phones that only have two arrow keys or something instead of all four. So you really do need something like that.
At least, I mean, if it's an optical trackpad, you know, if it's something that's on the phone, I mean, you could at least put a marking on the phone. If it's something you could label, then you're okay. But it needs to. Some phones don't have any controls at all, like Anna said. So yeah, you definitely need to have something like that. As far as the other part of the question, you can just have them when you're at the store. You know, run through the initial setup with you. You're going to fill in your Google, your Gmail, name and password. So have that, you know, have a Gmail account if you don't have one already when you get to the store. You're going to fill that in and then have them go to Android Market and download either the mobile accessibility demo or TalkBack or Spiel. That way you can leave the store and have things talking. And that's actually, I'm going to write that up as an article, what to have your store employee do before you leave the store. Because I think
when you do that... Try what we were talking about offline was maybe going to the market.android.com and doing an account, loading it there and seeing if the over-the-air transmission works, because that was something that Google added last month, was the ability to install apps from the web version of Android.
That is very cool. I love it.
Yeah.
Do you want to open up here for questions here, Mr. Joe?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. I want to ask JJ, because we have a lot of radio aficionados, and on your list of apps, you show quite a number of radio apps like Wonder Radio and TuneIn Radio and a scanner app. So I guess folks who like their radio have no problem playing all the different media types.
Yeah, Wonder. I don't know who sent in Wonder, if that was Honor or somebody else. I haven't tried that one. For me, it falls between TuneIn and Retro Radio. TuneIn is really good for listening to local stations, a lot of your over-the-air stuff, and also some it does podcast feeds and things like that. Very accessible. The Retro Radio will let you listen to anything in the Shoutcast directory. Plus, you can type in addresses if it's not in the Shoutcast directory. So that, you know, those two, between the two, yes, scanner radio, so just like it sounds like for police scanners. That's definitely one of the areas. The tools, utilities, radio, these type of apps where you have a lot of lists, choose from a menu, choose a station, those are the apps that really work the best with Android, it seems, you know, compared to you know, obviously, you know, some of your more advanced apps, maybe, like, you know, that present a lot of web views. That's a problem for us right now. But a lot of your, you know, most of your radio apps put all the stations in a list, and you select one, you play it, and so they generally work pretty well. So,
I noticed Joe's the other day in the list. It seemed really responsive and fast. Do you find that? I know you played with Matt's iPhone, so you played with both. I'm curious, people who played with both, you know, where really Android stands out. What would you say, this is actually better with Android?
Yeah, it's very responsive. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that running Talks and running Spiel on my phone can sometimes be sluggish. No harm to Nolan, but with MA, I tend to run a lot faster on my phone, and each build we got actually made the phone run even faster than I had thought originally. And so it really does make my phone a lot snappier. And that's one of the things that I like about the suite, though, is that it would have taken me a little bit more time using TalkBack to be able to write an SMS, or I might not have gotten the feedback that I had wanted. But when I'm in the suite, I am texting like a madman, because I had never really was a texter prior to actually using this. But when compared to OSs, and again, I want to not do too much of Apple versus Apple here, but surfing the market is just so much easier in the iOS store versus Android. Android, you kind of need to go out there and do some more research. You have to look around a little bit more. That's why JJ's new site is a great way of finding out more about a product before you get involved with it. But the Android store as a whole, to purchase something takes a little bit of time, and it's a little kludgy and doesn't really feel comfortable.
Right.
But once when you do it for a while, you don't notice it as much. But you certainly can discover more later on Android. Sure.
That being said, I've moved now almost all my market purchases at market.android.com, because actually once you're logged in, it's just two clicks. You can see all the information, you can see the description, and that really has made that experience a lot more easy. Now, of course, you're not always going to have that luxury, and they need to improve the phone app as well.
We do have a comment here from Mike Arrigo saying that if you do a search for App Store in Android, you will find an app that will allow you to install all accessibility apps. Very interesting.
If you have the memory. That's one of the things on some Android phones, is that you don't have a lot of memory. 2.2 allows you to start saving programs to the SD card, and that will free up a lot of memory and give you the ability to kind of move things back and forth. And it's one of the things that you can do in Android that you can't necessarily do with Apple. And it makes a big difference. Also, the ability to customize your ringtones, to customize notifications. You just told me about that custom SMS app I need to play with, actually. So there's a couple that I actually took on the list that's on our show notes from responses in the beta list when Code Factory asked what apps we were using. So Wonder Radio was one of those. And there's a couple on there, NPR Radio, which we've talked about in the past. I use MediaFly for some of my podcasting. There are some other ones out there, the Audiobooks app, which is kind of the front face to LibriVox. And there's a lot of media, a lot more than I had thought. But there are times, though, where something like, say, Revision 3, that runs a lot better on iOS than it does in Android. And so you do have some applications that are cross-platform where they don't use a lot of Java and crazy things on the iOS app, but when you get to the version for Android, there's a lot of animation and things that you wouldn't find. So I've seen a couple of apps that are like that, and then I've seen some apps that work better on Android than they do on iOS. Last FM was like that at first for me. Seismic is like that. I can't use Seismic on iOS, but I can use Seismic on Android.
Foursquare apparently now too, I guess, is iOS. iOS people are talking about issues there. But yeah, you're right. I see it go both ways too. There's some apps that Matt's using that I'll install them. And a lot of times it'll be something simple. And you can't focus, usually is what it is. You can't focus the controls. And that's usually the problem. It's different accessibility challenges between Android and iOS. And a lot of times the trick is finding the right person. The developers are usually willing to listen. And that is, I really do appreciate that. A lot of times the trick with the larger companies, though, is finding the right person to talk to. So that way they realize what needs to be done. Google did write up a little thing. Go ahead, Anna.
No, I was just going to say that I've had a wonderful experience with developers. Most of them are responsive. Once they understand what the issue is, they're very happy to help. It's been great.
Well, I know we don't really want to do a lot of comparison, but we kind of knew the question would come up here. And Aaron asks, why choose Android over an iOS device when you have to go through a lot of hoops just to get access? But it's...
Well,
that's a question.
Well, okay, here goes the rest of the show. Who wants to go first, guys?
I'll let you. You got it, John. You can start off.
Well, what about backing up your data? I mean,
mounting my phone and being able to see the drive is nice. That's certainly a wonderful thing. Not being tied to iTunes, for those of you who just went to 10.2 and had a little bit of frustration. The fact of the matter is not everybody is on AT&T or Verizon, and certainly not outside the United States. The other part about this is that you are in a family or in a environment, in a work environment, you don't get to choose your phone sometimes. And so if that's the case, because it was an economical reason, or you would have to get an unlocked version of another device in order to be able to have that, then it's important to have choice. And this is where I'm also getting to, is that, you know, with Android, there are all sorts of alternatives. We have Spiel, we have TalkBack, now we have mobile accessibility. Nolan just released TouchType, so there's that out there. There's a community that's really growing up rapidly and giving us opportunities, and we heard tonight that Code Factory is throwing that open to let other people develop portions of that with the SDK. With Apple, you are stuck with whatever Mr. Jobs decides that, you know, works or does not work. And you can't even necessarily regress back to an older version, because at some point iTunes will just say, hey, you got to be doing this version. And so there's a Pandora's box here. It's great that there are two or three models of a certain phone that gives you the ability to kind of control it from a walled garden perspective end to end. And if that's what you are looking for, then God bless. That's great. And I applaud Apple for all the advancements that they're doing for accessibility. However, it can't be just one, and we have to have competition, and we need that to be able to make better phones for all of us. Also, if something was to go wrong, we can't all just then be out of phones. So it's good that we have this. It's good that we promote this. And for those of us who are using that platform, it's great that we advocate and find these things to make it better.
I think, too, beyond the concept of choice in general, there is the issue of money. The Apple is a fantastic device, but it's very pricey. Even for people who live in countries where they can afford it, Android comes in lots of different price ranges. So somebody living in a developing country can have an accessible phone they can afford. And my hope is that the accessibility will improve and become comparable to the Apple's, to that of Apple, so that, you know, somebody living in a third world country can purchase this phone and use it as a work tool and as a school tool.
Absolutely. I think for me, the couple of things that sold to me, the openness of Android, of course, I know that does leave the door open for security that just happened last week with some stuff that was thrown in the market. But the openness, of course, having the QWERTY keyboard was a big seller for me. And kind of like what Joe said, the fact that you can replace anything, if you don't like the contacts manager or the phone screen, you get a different one. You want a different home screen, get a different one. You want, even the screen while you're in a call or this, you want it, you can just about anything that's there on the phone, you can write something to do it a different way if you want. And it's just really nice to have that freedom to be able to do those things. Of course, like you said, being able to mount as a drive is nice. And one more thing, Nintendo is awesome.
Haptic feedback is kind of cool too. I like being able to have it vibrate when I'm on controls and certain things that work really well for vibration. That was a feature that I didn't expect that I would end up liking on the Android phone, but I have come to rely on it for certain applications. So it is a big difference in experience. However, once when you kind of get used to it, it does come a little easier to you. But again, intuitive is intuitive to the person that's using the phone and their background.
Well, Rodney makes a good point here, because you have greater configurability of what you do with the phone you have and the OS you have, but there are more limitations, right, as far as upgrading it when the new operating system comes out, right? Or some phones more configurable in that regard.
There's a lot going on about that. About a month or so ago, an article came out about how over-the-air transmissions, or OTA, works, and that who pays for it? Does the carriers pay for it? Does the manufacturers pay for it? Does Google pay for it? Certainly, Google would love everybody to be on the latest version of Android. Certainly, the handset makers would like you to buy the latest version of their phone, so there's a reason for them to nerf or hold you back on versions. And then there's the carriers, who don't necessarily want to take up the bandwidth pushing a bunch of updates. If we look back again, if we look back to the old model, it took several years for the iPhone to become accessible, and it wasn't until 3GS days that things started to really get there. And we're having the same thing with Android. Android has to mature, and unfortunately, the way that Google usually approaches something is they throw a lot of things at the wall and sees what sticks. And probably nobody is more surprised about Android's success than Google. And I think that's where it is now, where they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle. And how do they get everybody on 3.0? How do they get everybody on 2.3? How do they get everybody moving forward? And last month's development conference, you saw some moves towards that where they even released a development portion called fragmentation, which was to allow you to develop an app for tablets, but also was backwards compatible to the phone. I think we're still easily another product cycle away from having something that works a little bit better towards them. But because this is so open source and you have so much open ability to grab things, it may be that it might be an entire new product refresh, like an entire new version of Android or whatever comes up next after Android, before we get some of the accessibility things that we need in order to make something more traditional to what we're used to using in accessibility for screen reading.
Now we have a question of the price, which of course was mentioned earlier, of €69 or $95 for mobile accessibility. Have you heard really complaints in Twittersphere, Facebook, of people either feeling they shouldn't have to pay anything or having issue with the price, or everyone pretty just glad to have the increased accessibility?
A lot less than I expected, honestly. I was curious to see how this was going to be taken by the community, and the reception was pretty warm, you know, just especially considering Twitter and how sometimes Twitter is negative towards everything that happens that costs more than a dollar. So
hashtag fail.
Exactly. So I think in general, I mean, you know, I think it's about as good as reception as they could have hoped for a new product. And I know there's definitely a lot of interest in it from their own mailing list and from other people talking.
And I think for a lot of people, it's definitely worth the price. So it really does depend on how comfortable the user feels with it and with their phone. So it's a lot lower than other products of its type. So.
And combined with a lot of phones that are free, it will be cheaper than an iPhone if you can get an Android phone free on contract. So,
yeah.
Wow, we're getting a lot of questions that kind of ask the same thing over and over again. And like this most recent one, should I switch from iOS to Android? I mean, again, it's a personal, here's the differences. Maybe, JJ, a good article just outlining the differences between the two. Someone make that informed decision. Part of it's going to depend on your skill level, you know. How willing or interested are you in kind of geeking out your phone and playing around with it and modifying it? Or do you want something you can just run and have everything right there in front of you and you flick around and do what you got to do? It's hard to answer a question like that.
Set or forget, I think, is what you're looking for there. Android is, by its very nature still right now, kind of geeky and kind of very technical. And if you feel very comfortable in exploration and discovery, then you might like Android. If you would rather have something that's more end-to-end, easier to use, more simplified, and in some cases a little bit more totally blind-friendly, then Apple may still be the best thing for you and what you're looking for. Again, it's some people drive stick, some people drive automatic. And so some people are going to find this limiting and others are going to find it liberating.
It kind of depends, too. I mean, some of the things, if you're an iPhone user, you know, if the iTunes issue, you know, having to use that, if that's a big deal to you and that really annoys you, then maybe, or you know, or some of the other things, then maybe you want to think about switching. If that's just water under the bridge and you know you can live with it, or some of the other issues with the iPhone, then you know maybe you're fine with it, or at least wait till your next contract is up, and then go try things out. Boy, you know, there's little things here and there. You could go back and forth all day. VoiceOver doesn't let you change punctuation settings, or it didn't before, at least. You know, the little things like that. I mean, but there's plenty of things on Android that you couldn't do either. Mobile accessibility does have a lot more of the screen reader type commands that you're used to. Rate, pitch, verbosity, punctuation. You know, the speaking list numbers or speaking numbers or digits, things like that. So that's definitely one thing that will be comfortable to screen reader users as well. But I think most of the people at this point, a lot of people that are using Androids are coming up from either Windows Mobile or Symbian. So a lot of those people are the ones that are probably the first to jump on, and they've been kind of holding out for a good solution. It'll be interesting to see how things shape out over the coming months.
Well, and Pete Bosley makes a very good point that I just want to add here that Android is in so many places that we as a community cannot afford to ignore Android despite anything Apple has done. That's a very good point. Because think about it, folks. This is the first time the top two phones in all stores, you're going to go in, you're going to find, at least in AT&T and Verizon, you're going to find both choices, Android and I devices. So the point is that we have accessibility to this. This is a great day. This is what we should be striving for.
And you can try it out, too. I think that's a good point, Michael, is that you could walk into any of those stores and ask to, you know, turn on VoiceOver. You can ask to download Talks or the demo of mobile accessibility and play with this before you buy. And that's another thing is not only have we not had the opportunity to go in and put our hands on accessible devices unless you knew a dealer or went to CSUN or something like that, but here's, you know, the ability to walk into a store that's virtually nearby you and have your ability to try both of these. And again, like we were saying, some of this breaks down to personal preference. And me personally, I have an iPad. I have my Android phone. I'm not a big fan of Samantha on both. But the thing is that if I'm in a crowded room and I'm relying on a virtual keyboard and I have to hear the letters C, B, or V, I would rather type the letters C, B, and V. And again, that breaks down to personal preference. There are some people who don't mind. And what I've said on Twitter is that sometimes you have to make a decision. Do you want your phone to be a Star Trek tricorder or do you want it to be a Star Trek communicator? If you want your phone to be a phone and you just want to make calls and you're not into all these crazy apps that we talk about each week, then there's still things like the Haven and other opportunities out there. But if you're looking for something to do a lot more than just make calls, literally the personal computer in your pocket, then certainly both of these types of phones are compelling and give you a lot to for what you're choosing.
But I want to throw this question out because some phones are not an option, I guess. And Jim says, is it possible to use some of the new currently phones, like from Verizon? Because I noticed some phones like the HTC are not modifying and gray out the accessibility option.
In some cases, you have to download the speech synthesis. Because when you do this, it's just like when you buy a PC and they can modify the Windows install, the OEM install. So you can add things to the Android OS once when you have it on the phone. A perfect example was that I couldn't get to some of my accessibility options when I upgraded my LG Ally from 2.1 to 2.2, and that was because the speech installer had changed. So I had to download the package and get Pico, and then I had speech back. So I was pulling out my handheld magnifier and rubbing my nose up on my phone. But I eventually got that done. When they do the updates, they don't necessarily put all the pieces into it, so you had to go back and get it. There are other people who've done the update and had speech all the way through and were just fine. So it varies on the carrier, it varies on the handset maker, and it varies on what kind of build they're using and how big that build is, because they have the ability to modify all of that. I'm not aware of any phones outright that are not working with either Talks or Spiel or MA. Are you JJ or Anna?
Phones with the Sense UI, these are many of the HTC phones, tend to have more accessibility issues. Some people use them and seem happy with them, but other people, especially people who are totally blind, tend to have more issues with them because that seems to disrupt the accessibility of contacts. It removes the power button and calls feature and other things like that. So I think I would avoid phones with the Sense UI if another option is available.
Right. I mean, that's definitely, I know, part of the problem. I know mobile accessibility does overcome some of that, especially, you know, since there's a contacts app built in and things like that. So that certainly helps out.
Plus for mobile accessibility, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see, to watch over the next few months. You have the Level Star announcement this week. I'm not sure if you're going to get into that at all, but there's that coming down. I know there's other companies working on it, and I don't believe Nuance is staying totally quiet on Android. They've been kind of hint at it towards ATIA, so there's still more coming.
Right, we still have the Braille Wizard, you were referring to with the Orion, with Level Star. That's certainly bringing things in. We're seeing some platforms that we're used to on the traditional note taker, you know, possibly coming to an end or at least reaching a stagnant point as far as the OS development. Not necessarily that they're not developing for it, but certainly Microsoft is moving on. And it is a low-cost alternative because a perfect example is that when you sell something in the App Store for Apple, Apple is going to get a 30% cut. To combat that, you have Google saying, okay, here's 10%. So for an app developer, that's a big chunk of money that they get back, and it might be an incentive for them to consider, you know, developing for Android. Or in video games, you have to decide which one you're going to develop for, and then you port it from place to place to place. Right now, the trend is to develop for iOS and then port your programs to Android. That could change because certainly Android is getting larger. So we have to keep an eye on this, not just as users, but in as accessibility evangelists ourselves. We have to keep an eye on this because there is a possibility that, like the PC, the PCs will just outnumber Apple, and we have to keep an eye on that because we need accessibility on both platforms.
Right. One more point on the programming front for people who are blind and wish to program, you can do it all in Android with text, which and it does seem to be a little more of an issue at this point for people trying to program for iOS. So if you want to write Android applications, and that's something that you might want to think about as a developer, not only can it will run on the phones now, it might run on this Level Star thing or on the Braille Wizard or the Orion. So that's certainly, if I was a developer, I would definitely be thinking about this this market in the next few months.
Definitely.
Were you going to expand on that, Anna? I'm sorry.
No, I was agreeing. I think I'm hoping that more blind developers get into developing for Android. I think that would be great.
Well, when you talk about a note taker, she mentioned the point that limitations in the API prevent Braille. Do you think Braille will be a crucial component for a note taker?
The Orion said they're going to have it. They're having
they're
an 18-cell version, so they've overcome it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ability to write a framework and put your own shell in something is kind of one of Android's strengths, because you can actually slide between what we would consider Windows themes, but it goes much deeper than that. The ability to switch from one environment to another. So you could be in the regular Android system, or you could slide into the Android mobile accessibility suite. Certainly gives us a new way of thinking about how programming works and how accessibility might work, because it's not like you can just replace Windows, you know, and in this case, you're kind of working around the limitations of Android. And let me state again, we're not bashing Apple here, and it is not my desire to try and sway somebody one way or the other. Certainly to provide information and talk about Android is what we're after tonight, because in December we were a little down. We started off in September very high about the platform and had a lot of great things to say about it, and then we were kind of lost there for a while in December, and it was really good to start this tech chat up tonight and talk about some of the accessibility triumphs that have happened. And again, probably in a couple of months, we'll do this again, and the landscape will have changed once again.
Here's a question I don't think anyone can really answer. Jeff asks, how many off-the-shelf applications are accessible for Android versus Apple? I mean, that's where you need these comparison, these product review websites, because who knows who's had the time and desire to go test all these apps.
Well, yeah. Put an asterisk by it as well. Accessible today, just like I said a moment ago, it's going to change. When we did our conversation in September with Chris Millsap, we talked about Seismic. And from September to December, Seismic changed and made some radical changes to the way that their program worked that affected talks. Affected TalkBack and Spiel negatively. And they've altered that again since our time in December. So when we're looking at the mobile app situation, how many times do you go into the App Store and run your finger down to updates? And the other day I had like 7 updates on apps, and I have like 100 apps on my iPad. So it's going to be transitory. Anytime we talk about accessibility now, it's going to be day and date.
Well, Mike Arrigo comments, one of the advantages to Android is free GPS and turn-by-turn navigation directions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Not only with the Google navigation, which does work really well, there's the other apps that we did talk about before back in September, the Intersection Explorer, one of those podcasts, Intersection Explorer had just come out, which of course lets you, you know, virtually explore the map, walkie-talkie, which gives you walking directions. You can kind of use these layered if you want. You can use Foursquare to find a business and then, you know, jump to navigation, things like that. So I mean, they're definitely, GPS is definitely one of Google's strong suits. Of course, they've done maps for forever, and it works. The accessibility there is, you know, it could be improved, but it's very reasonable.
So do you have the ability to, this would sell me, if you have the ability to do POI, points of interest, as you're walking by different businesses and have announced what they are, who they are?
It wouldn't surprise me if there's one other thing. There's hundreds of GPS apps out there, and considering that there's apps out there for geocaching and things like that, it would not surprise me if there's already one out there. We just don't know about it. So, you know, that's part of the goal of Android Access. Maybe somebody will find one and they'll put it up there.
Or write it up and get to like Google Places and then hook it up through that, through the SDK. I mean, there's lots of ways of doing that. In mobile accessibility, the Where Am I app works with Wi-Fi as well as GPS, and it's pretty good. And it gives you an idea of where they're going to start off with it. There's certainly things that they could do to improve beyond where it is. Maybe emulate what Sendero's Look Around is doing. So certainly there's some opportunity, but also you have voice input and voice navigation, like what JJ was talking about earlier. So you could actually, you know, speak that into it and have Google Maps hook in and then get your POI that way. I mean, we're at a gold rush period, I think, in mobile accessibility on any platform. And this is the time where people are running out to California to find gold. And I'm really going to be excited to find what they do get.
Yeah, and this is one area where having other blind programmers develop their own apps would be great, because we know what we want. We want an app that's going to give us points of interest. And, you know, as JJ said, there's probably one out there. We just haven't discovered it yet. But if, you know, somebody who actually needs this and would use it on a daily basis were to develop it, that would be great.
Now, what about some of those blindness things that we would all enjoy, like OCR or currency identification or light probes and things like that? Where are we with OCR? Is anything?
I know there are some mainstream OCR apps. I've tried a couple and they haven't worked. But, you know, I tend to try apps when I'm avoiding doing other things. So the next time I have a lot of work to do, that may be my project.
The other thing about that is that you don't have a dedicated camera that you can count on like you do with, say, the iPhone 4. You know, that's a 5-megapixel camera, and Apple did the camera API, yada, yada, yada. With Google and Android, you could have a phone like mine with a 3.5-megapixel camera, or something like the Droid X, which has like an 8. So the experience level is going to be wildly different. Red Laser is very unwieldy on my phone, but it happens to work on my friend's Droid really, really well. So it's hard to say, because your experience is going to vary because of the handset maker, because of the memory on the phone, because of blah, 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 blah. So it has a lot to do with what the hardware you are using is happening. And we're going to see that at some point with Apple as well. When you start to have a different model every year, at some point you're going to have built-in obsolescence. So there are going to be people who love, say, their 3GS, but the apps will be leaving them because the development platform will be moving, say, iPhone 4 and up.
Part of that, too, as far as like Looktel for the iOS, which was a great app, you know, the accessibility came to the iOS devices first, so it's logical that a lot of developers of applications for the blind would do an iOS version first. Even Serotek did with iBlink. But, you know, for now, coming into this year, you know, some of that will change. I think, you know, I know Bookshare is already looking at having an Android app, and there already are ways to do Bookshare books. And there are other companies that are starting to think about doing Android apps on top of their iOS apps in the future. So, and I'm sure as more blind people move over or move to Android, these companies are not going to avoid an opportunity to make a buck.
Yeah, why leave money on the table?
Well, yes. It's an interesting question. Ryan asks, do you think now that there are now multiple accessibility solutions with these phone platforms, will they start becoming affordable? I think they already are. I mean, we're definitely seeing dramatic price drop. I mean, my God, if you can OCR for a dollar, read your currency for $1.99, well, so much for the $99 app, you know, piece of hardware you bought to read your money.
That's pretty affordable, so. I'm thinking.
Well, Blind Bargains had how many different phones you were posting around Christmas? The Ally was there for a penny. There was Droids up there for really cheap. A lot of these are coming free with contract. So it really depends on what kind of market you're looking for and when you enter the market. So your barrier to entry, actually, I would say, is a lot easier now than, say, 2 years ago.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, and like you said before, it's nice to have accessible solutions for almost every single phone platform, except for Windows 7, which, of course, we won't even talk about here. But just about every there is accessibility solutions all over the place now, and that's definitely a welcome change to see for sure.
Right, and there's still people developing for Symbian as well. Symbian 3 talks announced for that. That's maybe where I made the Freudian slip earlier. So there's still, you know, Symbian out there. It's not completely – he's not dead yet, Jim. And so we still have other players in the market to look at as well.
Especially international. I know internationally there are still a lot of Symbian users. When we get calls for mobile speak, that's a lot of that where that comes from is internationally. So there's still a lot out there. One more thing as far as – Google, I'm encouraged that they're doing roundtables next week at CSUN. This just came up today, and they're soliciting. They want to do focus groups to talk to blind people, which really could be. I mean, it depends where it goes with this, but it's a definite good sign to see that they're there.
Yeah.
What about social networking? Twitter, Facebook. You mentioned Seismic having some issues. But there's no problem in your social networking communications.
I hate Facebook, but I can use the Facebook app on Android. My wife would probably like it if I did that more. There is other branching software that will let you connect into Facebook, so there are some of those that are out there. I use Seismic for Twitter. The official Twitter app doesn't work any better than it does on iOS, so no advantage there. There are Foursquare. We were just talking about that a moment ago. So there is that. There are some of those that are out there, like some social things like Last.fm. Some of their social stuff doesn't work nearly as well. But
I am plus if you want to.
Sorry, we didn't lose JJ.
I am plus. Okay.
I am plus. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Any more on? Do you have any more on the social marketing page there, or your social media page on Android Access?
I'm trying to think if you missed it. I think that covers most of Heytel, which that's a push to talk app that a lot of the iPhone users are using. That works on Android. You can talk between Android and iPhone users as well, and that works really well. And the developer is very interested in improving accessibility there.
Anna, did we miss one?
I was going to say, actually, Facebook is partially accessible. It actually works a little better in mobile accessibility than it does in TalkBack or Spiel. And so one of my current campaigns is to contact the people at Facebook. And so this gives me an opportunity to remind Android users that if you find an application that isn't quite accessible, you really need to write to the developer and explain what the issue is, what accessibility is like on Android, because most really will be helpful. And, you know, I've gotten my first response from Facebook. I'm hoping that means that down the pipe, the app will be a little more accessible.
And you can also use the mobile accessibility browser to get over to Facebook as well. Right. So you've got that option, which we didn't have before. Exactly. And that makes things a lot easier.
A lot easier, yes.
Google created a page on their Eyes Free wiki that just kind of little tips for developers that I now include whenever I email a developer. We have a link to it on the Android Access homepage. And I think that it kind of just, in a very short words, kind of tells them what they need to do as far as labeling buttons and making your application navigable. So I just include that link now whenever I write a developer.
Yeah, and my most recent post on Android, yes. Accessible Android is the same kind of thing from an end user's point of view. So I'm hoping that between the two of those, that
very well done,
people.
Oh, so we get down to our final 5 minutes. Are there any just categories of Android that are still a little weak, or do you like a little better support? I mean, we mentioned OCR earlier, but any particular just whole groups of things you want to do that you're waiting for new apps?
I'd like a better media player or a a basic media player. Sometimes I find being able to navigate on the buttons that come on stock Android is kind of a pain. And I know there's Rockbox out there. I've used that, but I'm not talking about audio. I'm talking about web video, YouTube, or when you go to other people, like I use Giant Bomb, which is a video game site, or even the Twit apps for MediaFly. Some of that isn't labeled, or you have to guesstimate on the screen where you're tapping to hit play or pause. So that for me is kind of my big thing, because I stream a lot of media on my phone when I'm waiting or writing with people. So that's kind of my biggest part.
I'm most interested in being able to read text on my phone, you know, maybe if there's something I downloaded from the web or something, that a document that I want to read to prepare for something. I'd like to be able to read it on my phone, and I know that's coming along, but it's still in its infancy, I think.
Yeah.
Wow. Go ahead, JJ. I might close with this final question here, but go ahead.
All right. Just quickly, I think some of the advanced file formats, Microsoft Word, Excel, PDF, things like that, I would love to be. There is not a good solution for that, short of converting them to HTML.
Well, keeping aside personal preference, or you really can't keep that aside because you have to factor it in, but I know this question is very individualized, but what do you all think is going to be the best phone to purchase right now? And that, of course, could also depend on your financial resources.
And carrier.
And carrier.
Yeah.
Touchscreen versus keyboard,
If you didn't have to make a choice, I would say wait 3-4 more months to see what iPhone 5 is like. I think that hinges a lot of decision-making. Several people who had to make a decision to go to Verizon, poor Pete Bosley, who had to make a decision on going to Verizon and choosing the iPhone 4, you know, were locking themselves into a contract. All these guys who just ran out and bought the $50 3GS, you know, you're going to have a very bad reckoning when Apple decides to announce iPhone 5. And I think a lot of that hinges on what your decision could be. So if you don't have a reason to jump, or if you can just get by a couple more months, I would wait for the iPhone 5 announcement and see if that meets all your needs, because there's going to be a plethora of phones out there to combat or do more, or maybe have something that fits more your lifestyle.
Or if they decide to bow down and put in an actual keyboard.
Keyboard.
Yeah, that was a rumor I saw. I don't think that's ever going to happen. But and that, not to mention, okay, the 3GS, which you can get that through AT&T still for $50. And if you're getting that now on a 2-year contract, I'm not sure if Apple's going to be updating the firmware on that for 2 more years. And so I would be a little wary of that. They've already basically dropped the 3G. So that would concern me. Android phones at this point, if I were to get a new one at this moment, the T-Mobile G2 looks good on the GSM side. It runs stock Android, which is good. You know, it has all the basic customizations, but you know, it's a pretty stripped down interface and it works well. There's a couple Sprint phones that are looking really good. A lot of people are raving about at this point as well. Even Metro PCS has one with a QWERTY now. So I mean, some of these carriers where there weren't any accessible options in the past, you know, some of that's getting opened up now.
Yeah, and as long as people get the phone, play with it for a couple of weeks so they have time to return it, I think any phone that has a QWERTY keyboard and a physical navigational control and maybe not the Sense UI should be a good phone.
Well, exactly. And, you know, if you really want T-Mobile to save money, or Sprint, you know, again, that leans you to Android. We're down to our final 2 minutes, so I want to take a final round of comments, and I guess I'll start with you, Anna. What you would like to leave our listeners with?
Android is a great platform. You do need to be a little adventurous. Mobile accessibility has really helped out a lot of users with that.
JJ?
I think we said most of what I needed to say, but I'm glad that there's options. I'm not an Apple hater, really. Some people might think I am, but I really do appreciate what they've done, and there's a lot of good things about the iPhone. I'm glad to see choice and accessibility, and I hope it all continues.
Joe?
Yeah, I'm also going to echo that. I knew coming into this one it was going to be a little bit more upbeat. I really didn't like where we left off in December. Code Factory has certainly done something to allow me to use my phone more often. And I'm really excited about this first 1.0, and I'm elated to know that it's going to continue. The beta is going to continue. They've already gotten some ideas for future feature to the roadmap, and so it's going to be, I'd say, moving up from here, because we're starting to see a lot more people join the party. And I also want to say real quickly, Blind Cool Tech has some demos out there. There are demos that these two lovely people have also done, and you can listen to those. And you can also go out and download those demos, or steal your friend's Android phone and play with it. And it's easy to uninstall if you don't want it to have there. But you do have the ability to go out and try these for yourself. We've answered a lot of questions tonight about what we think, but really what it comes down to is putting it in your hands and letting you decide. And that's what this podcast and all of Serotalk is about.
And I guess my final comment would be that even if you don't think Android is for you, be excited. Welcome, embrace alternative or additional options, because that breeds innovation. It improves accessibility. It lowers the prices. Competition is and always will be a good thing. And I thank all of you for joining us this evening on Tech Chat 93. Next Thursday, nothing live, but look for great coverage from CSUN. And, of course, our March 24th CSUN highlights. We'll get at least three people who are actually there for a good bit of the week and throw that your way. And, of course, you can follow up in the SAMNet Tech voice chat room if you like. And if you don't have access to SAMNet, you can go get a free 7-day trial at www.sa2go.com. That's SATOGO.com. So again, I thank you, JJ, and Anna, and Mr. Joe Steinkamp, and we will speak with all of you very shortly. Our next podcast on March 14th with a lot of good news. So until then, stay connected and stay directed.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.